At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Save big during Labor Day at Lowe's. Get up to 40% off select major appliances. Plus, buy more to get up to an additional 20% off. Shop even more savings with 3 Stay Green 1-cubic-foot vegetable and flower garden soil bags for $10. This Labor Day, take care of your home for less at Lowe's. We help. You save. Valid through 9/3. Soil offer excludes Alaska and Hawaii. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
I'm Commander Shepard, and this is my favorite lore cast on the Citadel.
Welcome to the Mass Effect Lorecast. I'm N7 the Legend.
And I'm Genesis. Join us
as we explore along tides of light
and through shoals of dust
to see where this lore began
and consider where it may go.
Spectres, welcome back to another magnificent, wonderful, superfluous week of the Mass Effect Lorecast. I am your host, N7 the Legend. Genesis is joining me as always. Genesis, how has your week been?
Very thesaurus filled.
Yes, there we go. That's what we want. We want a good vocabulary. And we want to be able to know how to speak it since we're on a podcast. But we are now at our final Aria episode for now. And I say final because we always seem to find more elements to talk about later on.
Yeah, there always seems to be more lore. We look at a new comic, we look at a different website, and here we go. There's a lot more information to start diving into. And we've kind of already covered quite a bit about Aria. First, we talked about her in the Is Aria a Secret Spectre? And then we branch to who is the owner of that club in ME2. Then we talked about why does Aria leave Omega off in the hands of Cerberus? So we're going to pick up the story from there because we've answered those questions. But now we have to talk about what happens after she strategically retreated from Oleg and the events that happen in Mass Effect 3.
Right, so she goes to get help, the best help that she can get in the galaxy, and that takes us to where Shepard meets Aria in Mass Effect 3 in the Citadel, and a club, interestingly named Purgatory. Jen, what do you think is up with this theme of club names here? Afterlife, Aria's club on Omega, right? And then Purgatory, where we find her in Mass Effect 3.
It fits the theme that even thousands of years removed from the Roman Empire, it still takes up a lot of real estate in people's minds. What's your Roman Empire?
What is my Roman Empire? What is something I guess just current events. I always think about current events, but that's not particularly odd. Maybe DayZ, the game DayZ, is my Roman Empire. I always seem to come back to it at least once a year, and then I'm like totally obsessed. But I like the whole. So Afterlife makes sense in Mass Effect 2 because Shepard just got resurrected, right? Mm-hmm. I'm trying to draw some kind of parallel to where the writers may have been going with Purgatory being, you know, symbolic of something in Mass Effect 3, but I'm coming up on a blank here.
Well, I mean, other than the fact that it's Purgatory, you know, nobody really, it's not good, it's not bad, it's just there. And it's a place that we have to stay for a long time. We don't want to be in purgatory, disconnected from everybody else around us.
Mm, yeah, kind of like a holding place where life seems to pause. And we don't go into the afterlife yet.
Yeah, I mean, and that can be a good thing because it is a spot for us to put our life on pause, you know, and forget about the outside world for a little bit. So that's nice.
Right. So we see Arya here lounging on this sectional couch, not far from the dance floor, but this booth there looking very exclusive and isolated anyway. Kind of a symbol of her status that she's somehow retained, even though she's not on Omega anymore. And we find her arguing with a Citadel immigrations officer. Well, we already covered that clip back in this Secret Spectre episode, so we won't go into too much depth about it. But it turns out that Arya had fled Omega, and then she and her gang snuck aboard the Citadel somehow, and have been hanging out on the station for 3 weeks undetected by Citadel immigrations.
Yeah, we definitely covered that a lot already, but it's still quite surprising. 3 weeks is a long time for somebody to be hanging out and not get noticed or not be at least approached once or twice, going, are you supposed to be here?
Would this literally make her an illegal alien?
Until the counselor signs the immigration paperwork and or puts her into refugee status.
Which is like 30 seconds later.
Yeah.
She in the midst of all this, we hear Arya call up that Asari counselor on speed dial, and the counselor grants her a visa over hollow phone thing. So it's funny that Arya has such a close connection to the counselor, especially because she says that she hates the Citadel for being so, quote unquote, sickeningly uptight. And that the elusive man will pay for, quote unquote, every second I've spent in this bureaucratic hellhole.
I agree with Arya. We don't want to be here either.
She is definitely someone who thinks that regulations get in the way, that she should be able to do as she pleases, right, with no impediments at all. She's used to being the pirate queen. All of a sudden now, she's not even like the fifth biggest fish in the sea where she is.
Right. I mean, being on Omega, it doesn't feel lawless because there is definitely a law to the land. It's the rules of the land, though, and it's not regimented the same way that it is on the Citadel. I mean, on the Citadel, we have things, rules and regulations that we have to follow at all times. And Omega is a lot freer.
Yeah, I mean, my perspective here is that Arya has so much of an ego after having been the judge, jury, executioner of Omega for so long that she can't stand not being in total control of her environment.
Yeah.
And we already know that Arya hates it when she doesn't know something.
She wants to be in control at all times.
Yes. Which makes me wonder how exactly her past went before she got to Omega, right? It's usually someone who needs to be in control all the time is someone who's endured some trauma that they haven't really come to terms with. And so that they feel that they need to be in control as some kind of self-defense mechanism. So I'd wonder, what harsh things Arya went through in the past.
Well, we know that she was a dancer, a stripper at one point, and she had to raise up the ranks through that way while dancing on Omega. There was all the stuff with Patriarch. There's been a lot, and she was in the Asari military, so there have been a lot of situations in her life where she wasn't the one in control. And she has a child. And once you have a child, a lot of the control in your life goes away.
Well, at this point, Mass Effect 3 had a child because, of course, Kai Ling and co. Killed her daughter, Lysel, if I remember her name right. But let's take a listen to her very first meeting with Shepard and how she kind of recaps the events of that Omega comic to Shepard. We get to hear about it through Arya's lens. So here we go. We've got a short clip.
How did Cerberus defeat you? Deceit, distraction, and a big fucking army. They lured me away from Omega and ambushed me. I escaped, but Cerberus had already laid siege. By the time I could launch an assault, they were too entrenched.
If it were me, I'd want revenge.
Glad to see we think alike. I'll take Omega back, but I'll get to that. You're here because I have a proposition.
I'm listening.
The way I see it, If you don't defeat the Reapers, we're all dead. Won't matter where I'm sitting. It's in my interest to help you.
And so here's something that I really love about Arya, her ultimate pragmatism. Above any rule she might have, above any ego that she might have, she's pragmatic at heart. And real quick, I do want to give credit to Jaguar550, now goes by Commander Vicarion on YouTube. So prolific in uploading these gameplay clips, and it helps us dissect and talk about the lore. So thank you to Jaguar550. But back to the pragmatism, the fact that she has to be humbled in going and essentially groveling, although she doesn't want to kind of appear that way, she's essentially groveling and talking to Shepard like, yeah, I'm in a position where I need you now. Now, you needed me back in Mass Effect 2, but tables have turned.
It is very interesting to see this different side of Arya coming at us of the, I'm the one who needs help, so I'm cashing in a chip. You owe me. And because that's we haven't seen her like that before. But it is also very, it's good to see. It's character growth for her. So I was very interested to see where this was going to go on my first playthrough.
Oh yeah. My first playthrough, I was so into whatever quest she was going to give me. Right. And then as it turns out, Arya basically wants us to help her solidify her control over all three major gangs from Omega, the Blood Pack, Blue Suns, and Eclipse. And it's a few side missions which don't actually include a lot of screen time for Arya, but it's kind of a build-up to the Omega DLC. Now, if you haven't played the DLC, we're going to be spending the rest of this episode talking about it, so if you don't want spoilers for that, now's the time to tune out. However, it is included in the Mass Effect Legendary Edition, and I don't even know if you can buy the standalone DLC anymore. But point is, Arya needs those ships from the Blood Pack, Blue Suns, and Eclipse. And she markets it to Shepard as, hey, if we get these ships, then you will have a ruthless band of mercenaries to do all the dirty work that you need to do in the Reaper War. Because I know that your little alliance types don't want to keep their get their hands dirty.
Yeah, and therefore I was all for it. Like, even when I didn't know that I wanted to get every single little war asset, I knew that I wanted the mercs because they would be the ones that are out there doing ground battle and being the ones that are willing to do things on the little bit shadier side of things.
This would have been a perfect opportunity to work in a little remark from Arya if you had done the Arrival DLC in Mass Effect 2. Because Arya would have said something along the lines of, I'm just imagining here, like, and besides, I know that you're not against some killing every now and then, or something like that. You know, especially if you were playing a Renegade Shepherd, she could just throw that out there, maybe mention the Batarians, or, you know, something about how it's okay, Bray doesn't hold it against you.
Something along those lines, like, my second in command is a Batarian, are you okay working with them?
Maybe. Right. Okay, right. You're invited to come along on this mission, just, you know, leave Bray be. I know you got a thing for them.
I like Bray by the end of this DLC, though.
I like Bray a lot more than Anto. That's for sure. Anyway, yeah. So you do this little song and dance, as she puts it, and you unify the three gangs. And that leaves Shepard wondering, how do you plan to retake Omega? And I love the way that Arya replies here. She says, I think I'm going to use violence.
Good choice, Arya. That's a really, really good choice.
Like, she's I can just imagine her saying it through her teeth, like she's barely holding back the blood boiling rage that she feels for Cerberus and specifically old Peg Leg Oleg.
Mm-hmm. I choose violence. Yep. That's how Arya woke up today.
Right. So then comes the real fun, right?
Yes, the real fun. We get an email from Arya saying the time to retake Omega has finally come.
And, you know, I'm not actually sure on timing, exact timing here, because I always do the quests as soon as I can, and I'm a completionist. So I don't know if you skip those side quests, can you still start the Omega DLC?
Yes, you can do Omega even before the three Merc missions on the Citadel, because I had one run where talking to the Eclipse leader in the jail was completely glitched and she never showed up on the screen. And I couldn't complete the side quest, but I was still able to do the Omega DLC, no problem.
Interesting. So at least we know if you want to be a completionist, maybe do the side quests first. But we get this email telling us to meet her on Dock 42. We show up. And then there's this sky car with characteristically blackened windows that shows up and the door opens. And Aria is there to meet us. So let's check out this clip.
So where is she? Shepard. Aria. How dramatic.
There are too many eyes and ears in Purgatory.
I assume this is about retaking Omega.
This is about your war, Shepard. Cerberus controlling the Terminus system seriously bolsters their mobility. Since taking Omega, they've spread through the galaxy. Surely the Alliance has noticed.
Cut to the chase. What's your plan?
Kick them out. I've amassed a fleet of Merc ships. We're going to punch through enemy lines and invade. Once we're on Omega, it's a ground war. That's why I want you. I only accept the best. The leader of the Cerberus occupation is General Oleg Petrovsky. He's the one who ousted me.
Don't know him.
The elusive man's top military strategist and best kept secret. But all you really need to know is that he's a merciless bastard.
What's your intel on the occupation?
Petrovsky's army is massive and he's got Omega locked tight. The information stops there.
So you're winging it?
Not at all. There are secrets on Omega only I know. Secrets that will provide us a foothold. I can tell you this. Petrovsky's invasion was precise and ruthless. We'll stop at nothing to win.
He's about to meet his match.
That kind of talk goes a long way with me.
That kind of talk goes a long way with me. This playthrough that Jaguar 550 is doing is consistently picking Renegade options, as you probably noticed, Genesis, and I know that you love the Renegade, especially for the Omega DLC, but I'm a little Boy Scout, so I usually pick Paragon. I know you've done Paragon as well. Does this conversation go any differently if you're a Boy Scout?
A little bit differently, yeah. Because it kind of sets the tone. And especially one of the first few interactions you get with Aria in the actual DLC sets the tone if you are going to be defying her choices and trying to get her to change her mind by the end, or if you're agreeing with her and feeding into the emotions she's already having. So playing Boy Scout, I don't know. It's just not as fun for me in this DLC.
But regardless, yet another opportunity for Shepard to mold those around them through their own morality. And this whole he's about to meet his match, this is exactly what I was talking about last week when I said that this whole back and forth game between Aria and Oleg really felt perfect because they are each other's foils. He's very rigid. She's very fluid. And it's almost like this kind of catch me if you can dynamic with Aria and Oleg.
There's definitely that, and for him it's like a battle has happened like this before and this was the outcome of that battle, therefore when this happens again the outcome will be the same, and Aria's just there to throw a wrench into everything.
Right, she's an agent of chaos. And I also love how Aria pitches this to Shepard from the very get-go. Once Shepard jumps in the sky car, Aria basically says, this isn't about Omega. This is about your war. So Aria is a really good salesman here, like a really great one, because from the very bat, Arya is engaging us, the player, in terms of why this matters, why we should do this DLC.
Mm-hmm. It matters because if you help me, quid pro quo, if you help me do this, then I will be able to supply you with all of this. But I get my thing first.
You come to me on the day of my daughter's wedding. Yeah, that's a horrible Marlon Brando. I will work on that. But anyway, Arya basically says for that quid pro quo that, Shepard, you can have the ships, all the Ezo and the Mercs, anything you want if you help me retake Omega. And this feels like a moment where I completely trust her. She's actually being completely trustworthy, strangely enough, because usually you might doubt a pirate queen when she tells you this, maybe expect some betrayal along the line. But I think it's the hatred in her own voice when talking about Cerberus, when talking about Oleg, that really sells this, that really makes me feel like, okay, I can trust her.
Anger is a clean emotion. There's not a lot of deception that can happen through the lens of anger, because a lot of people can tell when you're faking being angry, you know, and it just doesn't sound right. It doesn't feel right. But this, you can tell that Arya is so angry, frustrated, pissed, betrayed, hurt, on the brink of defeat, to where now we can trust that she is going to do anything and everything to get Omega back.
Yeah, absolutely. She's far past her, you know, any reservations about holding a punch, any reservations she may have had about tapping into one resource here or one resource there. There is one thing, though. We can't bring our crew because Arya has, quote unquote, objections to the company that we keep. Jin, how did you feel about this part?
Extremely frustrated. Okay, it's not fair. Garrus knows Omega just as well, if not better, than Shepard, and would have been an asset for sure. And Arya kind of liked Archangel back in the day, so I'm not really seeing what the issue is, you know, unless we talk about the IRL complications of further voice acting and adding another squaddy that could buff the party size to 4. But still, I should have at least been able to take Garrus with me.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I was a little frustrated because I wanted to bring, you know, my beloved characters with me. However, I wasn't surprised because so many RPG games are like, you know, DLC area, you got to leave everyone behind because, right, you're going to get new characters in your party. You're going to get new blah, blah, blah. And this is a chance for a new adventure.
The one that they did that with, the Archered DLC, I don't remember what it was called, the Geth one. Where David Archer.
Oh, Overlord.
Overlord, thank you. They did allow your squad mates to go with you, but they had one, maybe two additional lines of dialogue. Edie, surprisingly, was the one with the most dialogue added into that one.
It could have also been a cinematic thing, right? They would have had to expand the cinematic budget if they were bringing different squad mates along. It would have meant including them on all the scenes. So who knows? Storyboard-wise, maybe they were a little bit further along than they could justify bringing in more squadmates. There's probably some behind-the-curtain reason there, but the narrative reason for me felt a little weak. So next mission, we board Arya's command vessel, and we end up seeing this tail end of a conversation between her and Jarl, who's an Asari Merc working for her. Jarl tells her that they're really outmanned and they're severely outgunned, which are tough odds from the get-go. Anyway, here, let's go ahead and play the clip, shall we?
Transports with limited firepower.
We're not here to win a space battle, Jarl. We just have to punch through their line.
So, you've commandeered a Cerberus cruiser.
The guest of honor has arrived. We can finally start.
Let me guess. You're planning on infiltrating the enemy fleet.
Exactly. We position ourselves to strike a crippling blow, then my forces join the fun.
Works for me.
If you're as accommodating the rest of the way, we'll get along very well.
Was that a flirty line, Genesis? That sounded somewhat flirty.
Yeah, there's a lot of little flirty things in this, but I wouldn't read too far into it for now.
Okay, I feel like she's being a little teasy, because Arya still knows that she's got sex appeal, even though she's, like, past middle age, right, for an Asari?
Yes, she's in her matron phase for sure. And it's also why I picked the wine glass that I'm drinking from tonight, because it says badass and beautiful, and that's Arya.
That is, it is, for sure. Now, I mentioned before that clip that these are really tough odds from the get-go. It's also something that Arya neglected to tell Shepard in the Sky Car. Hey, by the way, this could be a veritable suicide mission.
We've done those before and survived. What's another one?
Details, details. I don't know. I feel like Shepard should have a little bit of an opportunity to be like, hey, what the hell? We could have taken my ship.
That's a fair point. We could have taken the Normandy.
With its stealth drive? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm more upset about not being able to take the Normandy than I am a squad mate.
Why am I here? Why did I just leave my Lambo to get in your 1992 Toyota, I don't know, Celica? That's a throwback. But yeah, I would be a little bit peeved knowing that this is the game plan, that we are outmanned 4-1, severely outgunned because most of the ships in your fleet are civilian transport vessels. But hey, if your plan's to just dive right at the enemy and hopefully we punch a hole through and get to Omega, I guess so be it, right?
Yep.
All right. Well, that's all we got for the first half of the show. Let's go over to the mid-break and thank our patrons.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
We have beef, we have bacon, we have beer, the foods of my people.
Young men have funny ideas of what Asari are like. I blame the extranet and computer games.
Rex?
Shepard.
Grunt?
Shepard.
Rex? Grunt?
All right, here we are in the middle of the show, and we have no new reviews on Apple, but we do have a couple of nice remarks that people left us on Spotify. Number one coming from Bad Blood. It says, "Hello from England. I'm in the Royal Air Force, and basic training 3 years ago would have been very different if I didn't have you guys to iron to." Now, this first sentence I thought about for a while. Didn't have us to iron to. He literally means ironing. I thought it was perhaps some British slang, but then I realized, oh, he's ironing his uniforms while he's listening to us. All right. Well, next time you make that crease, you think of us. Anyway, Bad Blood says, though in 7 the Legend will always tell you he doesn't know everything about the lore, because I don't, and you give him too much credit, because you guys do, it's not the knowledge, but the passion and the dedication to researching the lore every week which deserves credit. Much love to both Tom and Genesis as well. You have all made this lore cast what it is to me and so many other people. Well, Bad Blood, thank you so much for those kind words. Really means a lot. That's, I think, like, those kinds of comments are why I continue doing this. And we have another one. Genesis, do you want to read this one?
Yeah, from Jeruko. Hello from Finland. Very interesting lore podcast. Can you cover Mass Effect Infiltrator game? And That's the cell phone mobile app, right?
That came out on the BlackBerry. That's how long ago that was.
Wow.
Yeah, and so this was a Mass Effect. It's like dead software now. You can't buy it anywhere. You have to get it through an emulator, I think. That's the only way I've seen people stream it. And it covers a Cerberus agent who basically finds out that Cerberus ain't that good. We will probably cover it at some point. I need to find out where I can get it specifically through totally legal and legitimate means. We will see about that. But maybe we can even stream that to our new Twitch, which is a good segue for plugging the fact that we are now an affiliate. So come on by, say hello, and we are working on some custom emotes for all of our subscribers on Twitch. But all right, thank you for those remarks on Spotify. If you like the show, or if you've got some suggestions, you can always leave a remark on the most recent episode of the Lorecast, and we look at those, try and include them on the midbreak. But that takes us to our voice line pop quiz. Jen, you've got one for me.
I do. Why don't you go ahead and play the one called I Cheated?
All right.
Damn it, woman. If you keep hounding me, I'm going to put you over my knee and teach you a lesson.
What in the world? Okay, hold on. Let's take another listen to that one.
Damn it, woman. If you keep hounding me, I'm going to put you over my knee and teach you a lesson.
Oh, boy. Caden's going to teach me a lesson. Wow. Yeah, I understand why you named this I Cheated, since we agreed not to use any dialogue from Caden and Ashley that's romance specific. So I am going to say this is Caden in Mass Effect 3. And, oh man, is it during a mission where you assign Caden to do something and you've asked Caden, are you finished yet? Is it the Geth mission where you're trying to take out the AA towers? Am I right?
No, it's called I Cheated because that's not Caden. That's actually Karth from KOTOR.
Oh, what the hell? Oh, that is that. Okay, you threw me a curveball there. And congrats to anyone listening if you identified that because you played KOTOR. But all right, we've got a second voice clip here. I'm guessing this is the real deal.
Yes.
All right, no more aces up her sleeve. All right.
I don't know. Operative Lawson's uniform is very official. It always makes me stand at attention.
Okay, that's Ken. Okay, that's Ken in the engineering bay or in... What is that room called? He's in engineering. He's talking with Gabby, and they're talking about Miranda. So Mass Effect 2, right?
Yes.
It's part of Ken's dialogue. I think that one's my second favorite line from Ken. My first one is the daddy bags one.
The daddy bags are good. But yeah, I figured since I cheated on the first round, I would give you a nice softball on the second one.
That was a softball. All right. We also have some new patrons to thank. Karina, Pickle 12, Odd Specimen, and Psych. Welcome back, Psych. If you've been a longtime listener of the show, then you probably remember Psych on some of the patron episodes. So we've got some new tier fives as well. Butts, 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 very fun name. And Tidega. We also have tier fives, Unfortunate Benefactor, William, Superfly 440, Retrobot, Lieutenant Tosino, Kira C, and Ed Boy. Thank you all so much for supporting the show. And if you like the show and you have the ability and the desire to help us out on Patreon, you can get some cool benefits that way. You get ad-free episodes with your own RSS feed. For tier fours and higher, you also get t-shirts with our own Mass Effect style designs on them once every quarter. And you get stickers as well for tier two, I want to say. Is it two or three? I think it's two.
Three.
Is it three? Okay. Anyway, I clearly need to brush up on my own Patreon. But that being said, let's get back to the rest of the show.
After time adrift among open stars, along tides of light and through shoals of dust, I will return to where I began.
Salarian reproduction different. Very little sex drive. If intended to try human, would try you.
Ow, my pancreas.
All right, and we are back with the rest of the show. Genesis, where do we go from here after Arya's told us about her suicide plan?
Well, this is where the DLC really and truly starts to pick up. And now that we can kind of look back and remember all that we learned about Oleg in the comics and why Arya needs to take back her station, it really adds to the stakes of the conversation that we see between Oleg and Arya in this opening scene of her returning. Now, what he says in the very beginning is, "Arya, I knew this had to be you." And that goes right back to what he said in the last panel of the comic of how MacArthur came back. So I love how they are playing on it there, and little nods of things that only people who read the comics would know exactly all the depth to that line.
That is really cool that they wrote that in, basically. You can tell that something about the comics was in production by the time they were writing the same dialogue for this DLC.
Mm-hmm. And that's so much fun. I love that. So here we are, making our way back to Omega. And it takes a little maneuvering to get there and a not-so-nice landing, which is why we take the Toyota and not the Lambo, I guess. But the Queen has finally returned to her station.
Yay!
Too much fanfare, and everyone's happy and firing, you know, like guns up in the air and that. What, right? Right? Everyone's happy about that? Except for Anto, I suppose.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of people named Cerberus who are not happy about Arya returning also, but probably Anto's not very happy either.
Right, and we're dropped into pretty much action right off the get-go.
Absolutely, and it's where Arya says that, you know, she's going to be the one in control, but on the ground, Shepard is the one in control. And I know that we've talked about that a little bit in the Is Arya a Spectre episode, but after thinking about it for a long time, I feel like it's because Arya knows that she has been out of combat for so long that taking orders is something that she can do in this moment. She's so much more big picture now.
Maybe she just respects Shepard's ground game enough to take orders.
It's true.
I like that.
Yeah.
I like that. Okay. As well.
She's switching things up.
So we go on, we shoot some things, and we race towards D deck. And here we go. Enter Nyrene Kandros, stage right. Now, she is the cousin to Tyrion Kandros of the Andromeda Initiative, a rare, naturally biotic Turian, former lover of Arya T'Loke, and secret leader of the Talons Gang. Oh, and the first female Turian we have ever seen in a game.
And for a select few of us, an awakening. Yeah. I've seen the archive of our own posts. I've seen the fan art on formerly known as Twitter. Yeah, so this was the first time we ever see a female Turian. It's also the second time that we've met one of Arya's previous lovers. Can you guess who the first one is?
Mordyn is unconfirmed.
Mordyn. I was talking about Mordyn, yeah.
Yeah. It is headcanon. It is definitely fanfic that Arya and Mordyn got together. I want that to be true so much. but I have thoughts on that one as well. But going back to that former lover status, we learn about this from Arya herself throughout the next few dialogue scenes. She really spends a lot of time talking about Nyrene. Comments like, "We go way back," and my favorite, "Nyrene, you left Omega fairly angry with me. I wasn't aware that you returned." Because the implication that Arya didn't know that Nyrene actually left Omega is quite telling. She wanted to keep tabs on her, but also respected her enough to keep her distance and not wanting to really know what was going on. Also feeling heartbroken and like not wanting to stalk your ex on Instagram.
And I guess, yeah, but still, Arya needs to know. right? Everything that's happening on Omega. So this being the exception about people coming and going is really something.
It is. Now, the conversations between the trio of Shepard, Arya, and Nyrene continue to clue us into the fact that Arya honestly cares and loves people. Just not most people. It's very select few.
Yeah, very. And she doesn't want to tell people that either.
No, of course not. That's a sign of weakness. Having an open heart and caring about people? No way.
Or perhaps she's kind of more of a tragic hero than we know, and she knows that anyone close to her or known to be close to her will be a target. So she's trying to protect them.
I absolutely feel that way about it, because she wanted to protect Patriarch, but keep him at an arm's distance as well. He's not really inner circle. He's not really an enemy. He's nothing to me, but I want to keep him safe and protected. So don't really talk about him.
Dave brings up, and Dave's joking, but he brings up a good point in chat here that if that's the case for Arya, Dave says, okay, Batman.
I am Omega.
Okay, Arya is Batman. I've seen Garrus in bat ears, but now I can picture Arya with them as well. Maybe she can sculpt some of her hair flanges up into little bat ears.
She gets a cape.
I want Arya in a cape.
Her little head tentacles into bat ears. All right, so she is almost like this. It's almost like this fatal attraction that she has to Nyrene. You get this sense that it is not a healthy relationship.
Yeah, and she kind of states that she says specifically, opposites attract. Our connection was powerful, yet doomed. And that's sad.
Star-crossed lovers is not at all a surprising thing that Arya would find herself in.
No, it's definitely a trope that would fit her personality type. And I could see how it was definitely a flame that burnt fast, but then had to fade quickly.
They're both very independent people, too. So I cannot imagine, like, you know what I mean? If two very independent people are seeing each other, there's going to be a falling out at some point.
So Nyrene actually talks a little bit about that specific thing, about the fact that Arya is such a powerful personality type, and she was so enamored and saw Arya as this powerful woman that she wanted to be. I want to be just like Arya, to the point that she started losing herself. And so Nyrene had to make that decision of, do I want to stay in a relationship with somebody who's making me forget who I am? Or do I need to break away in order to really solidify my own personality?
So, at least during the beginning, Nyrene was somewhat starstruck by Arya. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Well, I see that you have a favorite joke here from Arya.
Yes. My last comment on their relationship is that Arya gave the best one-line joke to a Garrusmancer like myself. Nyrene demonstrated zero flexibility.
I wonder how her reach was.
I mean, that means that she had to have the reach and Arya had the flexibility, which just opens up a whole new can of AO3.
Yeah, it does, along with biotics. Both of them having biotics. Well, that'd be wild.
Yes.
I'll try not to think about that one too much. Wow, look, my shorts just got tighter. We move forward, right? And what do we learn about Nyrene?
When we do, we learn officially that Nyrene is the leader of the Talons and that they are really the only mercs left alive on Omega with true firepower and military level discipline. And they got that from Nyrene, because Nyrene, and of course, was in the military, being a Taurian. Everyone has to go through it. But now the adjutants make their entry. We don't actually see them yet, but Arya lets us know that she has fought them before, and Nyrene kind of has a PTSD reaction just to the name.
Right on. So we've got a clip here from that scene that I'll go ahead and pull up, and let's take a listen, shall we?
Omega, I have returned. Cerberus believes they have beaten you. They believe they have you under control. They are gravely mistaken. You are the lawless of the galaxy. You cannot be beaten, and you will never be controlled. Be ready. Your chance to strike out against your oppressors is coming. Together we will take Omega back! That's your plan? Throw civilians at Cerberus? Anything is better than being locked up like mindless animals waiting for slaughter. I know what you're up to, Arya. And I don't like it.
All right. Hopefully I stopped that clip at the right moment there. We're really seeing here that Nirene and Arya have diametrically opposed morality.
Yes, and that really plays into the rest of the DLC, where you can support Nirene in it being all about the people of Omega, the citizens of Omega, the innocents in this situation, where for Arya is really about regaining control, regaining her power base, and using the civilians as people who are fighters, because she knows that the citizens are not just, you know, the innocents. They are also willing to take up arms and will fight for Omega right alongside her. And so that's also where Shepard's morality has to play into it. Do you want to support Nirene and help the little guy? Or do you want to support Arya in, we need to take this, the base back by any means necessary?
You know, I feel like there's probably arguments to be made on both sides that for Arya's justifications, look, this is total war. You will not be safe under Cerberus anyway. And so I can understand her desire to rally the people to try and retake Omega, but I do question her motives, because she just wants to be back in power again. How many bodies does it take to pile up along the way for her to second guess that desire, right? Whereas for Nirene, she just appears as the leader of, you know, La Resistance.
For me, Arya is not out there saying in any of her speeches that if you don't take up a gun, you will be exiled from Omega. If you don't fight for me, you will be killed right along Cerberus. There's no punishment for those who are not willing or able to take up arms, but it's just a rallying call for anyone who is able to fight back, to fight back. So therefore, it's up to the individual to make that decision.
Mm. So do you think that Nirene's being a little bit too soft in trying to protect the civilians?
With my playstyle, yes, I tend to agree with Arya. Let the people fight if they want to fight. And for me, I can also see that it's obvious that Arya and Nirene still love each other, but they are not in love with each other anymore. They know that they will continue to butt heads and be at these opposing ends of the spectrum when it comes to decisions like this. And Nirene has a point. Arya is willing to sacrifice a lot in order to stay in power. And it's up to Shepard to feed into that. It's up to the player to decide who to go with.
Right. And that's part of what I love about this DLC so much, that you're not just kind of railroaded into accepting Arya's narrative, right? You have this out through Nirene, where you can kind of try and steer Arya toward a different outcome. But Arya still remains in control for pretty much the entire offensive to retake Omega.
Mm-hmm. Because she continues to make the big decisions, how to advance through the station, where to go next, and how to manipulate the situations to maintain her power base, or to regain it in this case. She's quick to use citizens and the Talons as fodder to get to the reactor to shut down the force fields blocking their main paths. Her overall goal is to get back to the afterlife, because that is her central hub, and that's where we know Oleg is. She wants him dead.
Yeah, and that's the thing here. I think she may be willing to sacrifice civilian lives, sacrifice Talons, because she's also blinded by the hatred she feels for Cerberus and Oleg.
Blinded by the hatred, you are. Now, these force fields, we've haven't really talked about them, but they're different in this DLC than they are in normal ones. You can't just shoot them to make them drop like you can with other force fields we've seen. They're very special, and they disintegrate people. And in a moment of complete and total badassery, Arya shows that she's able to literally grab the shields by making barriers and mini Mass Effect fields around her hands.
She's without a doubt one of the most powerful biotics in the entire galaxy.
I would think so. And Nyreen uses her biotics in tandem with them to help bolster Arya's own personal shields, which was another indicator of course, I still care about you. I don't want to see you die in front of my eyes. I'm going to help protect you no matter what your final goal is. And then she asks the questions, how did you know you could do that? And Arya's response was, I didn't.
Right. Yeah, she didn't. And she doesn't think about the consequences. She just does, right? She just acts. And I kind of like this. I like this in terms of a breaking gender norms kind of thing, because for sci-fi RPGs, this was very progressive at the time. For sci-fi RPGs, which so had such a long history alongside fantasy RPGs, of objectifying women, putting them in support roles at best, and they were almost always hyper-feminine. Arya is the shining example of shattering that gender norm.
Very much so, but still being able to maintain a level of femininity. She does this all in high heels, baby. Are you kidding me? Like, I love it. I love the fact that she's able to be out there and still, she looks gorgeous. But even if she didn't, she's able to show that she's powerful in her own right. And I am all for it. That, and I like,
We basically had a front row seat to see why she's the pirate queen.
Mm-hmm. I also like the fact that Nyreen is a female Turian, not just because I want to see female Turians in this game, but it leads to, it's like, it doesn't really matter, you know? Arya's former lover is a woman. Get over it.
We're right. And it doesn't, it shouldn't really bother anyone, because Asari are monogendered species anyway. So, like, the idea of gender to Asari doesn't really make sense.
It's true.
Well, yes. I'm sure it could make sense on an intellectual level, but you get where I'm going with that.
Right. Okay, so where we are going with Arya next is that there is more fighting towards the goal of getting to the afterlife. And then there's a truly heroic moment that I think we should cover in a separate episode on Nyreen, because there's enough about Nyreen to talk about her on her own.
There really is. And we've just discovered recently when we were researching for this episode, there's an entire comic.
Yeah. And I had no idea about that one. So now I got to go figure out where I can get my hands on the Nyreen comic and see if there are other like Andromeda comics out there that I've missed.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So how does Arya respond to Nyreen's self-sacrifice?
Oh, she absolutely loses her shit. Full on, she's blinded by a combination of, I'd say, anger and frustration, pain and hurt, and just like a blind determination to make that sacrifice not in vain by getting to the afterlife. but it's in those following moments that she makes a critical mistake, being blinded by the heavy emotions, and she was able to be temporarily recaptured by Oleg.
Falls right into a trap.
Yep. It's a trap. But that's what Shepard's here for. We're here to save the day and get her, at least kill the bad guys around her so she can break herself out. We do not save Arya. Arya saves herself. We just give her the time in order to do it. Now, the next big decision that we have here is making the decision if we are going to kill Oleg or not. And I've done it both ways. I feel like both are satisfying in their own ways. But for the next scene to happen, you have to kill Oleg.
Yeah, and which scene would that be?
So, if you have agreed with Arya for most conversations, primarily choosing the renegade or the lower dialogue choices, there's one more very personal interaction with Arya that a lot of little Boy Scouts miss out on.
Okay, look, I know how to use YouTube, okay?
Now, both Bro-Shep and Fem-Shep get grabbed by the shoulders, and Arya kisses them in a moment of post-murder glow, I guess?
It's like a power boner, is what she has.
She has a rage on, and okay, go with it. Now, as a bro, Arya seems surprised that she just did that, and keeps her arms up in surprise at her rash decision. Bro just lifts the corner of his lips in a great smirk. It really is the smirk face emoji.
Bro Shep does have some pretty great smirks, dating back all the way to Mass Effect 1 when Analeas gets arrested.
That's true. That was a good smirk. It's also interesting that Fem-Shep gets a different reaction. Arya is the one that gives off a little smirk after the kiss, and her hands return to her signature arms across the chest pose. I like the fact that they are different. It reads to me that this was a heat of the moment decision, and that Arya has a preference. Kissing the bro is more impulse, and kissing Fem is more desire, in my opinion.
So we've got a couple clips here. You know, we've been talking about it a lot, but if you're watching along, why don't we go ahead and take a look, and then our viewers can tell us what they think about whether Arya was fully into it or not. All right, here we go. Ready?
Shepard, I never thought I'd enjoy having a partner. Thank you for not interfering. Killing that man was deeply satisfying.
Okay, so yeah, the blocking in that one, she just keeps her hands up like, like she just needed to get it out of her system, right?
Yeah.
And yeah, that is very much like a she's just happy with the situation kind of kiss. And It is pretty cool that they program different cinematics for if you played Fem-Shep or not. I also love how Bro-Shep just goes ragdoll when Arya pulls him by the shoulders.
Yeah, if Fem-Shep goes a little ragdoll as well, I think it's a little bit of like shock and surprise, because normally after, you know, a heated battle like we just went through, if somebody that I could potentially see as a threat grabs me by the shoulders, my reaction's generally going to be violent. But I think this was the immediate like, oh no, don't do anything bad, completely fall into it so that way you go limp in order to not attack.
I don't know. This kiss reminded me of like, it's like two friends who are at like, I don't know, like some event, they get drunk or something and they kiss and they're like, oh, Yeah, let's not do that.
Yeah.
Tried it that one time. It did not work out. I think we're good to walk away from.
We're solid. Nah, no feelings hurt. Okay. That's kind of how it felt. And then she immediately changes subject and being like, okay, yeah, I really enjoyed killing him. And then Shepard can just go, yep, me too. All right, why don't we go now?
I should go.
Yeah, that's the perfect segue for Shep to lean into that I should go line. That makes me wonder what the animation is for FemShep, so I will look that up after we're done here. But from there, don't we have like one final iconic scene in this DLC?
Yes, there is the final speech that Arya gives over the speaker system to all of Omega, that she is finally back in control. And this speech might sound different to you than what you're used to hearing, because this is if you have gone the renegade route the whole time. And so I know for a fact that it's very different than somebody who has gone the Paragon options, who decided to not kill Oleg to do all those things. So this might be some of our listeners' first time hearing it this way as well.
All right.
Citizens of Omega, hear me. I, Arya T'Loak, have given you back your lives. My rule is reignited. My hand is on the controls once more, and I will not let go again.
Each of you owes a debt. Gain my favor by rounding up the remaining Cerberus invaders, and
we'll take our revenge. It's their turn to tremble. Their turn to bleed.
Going forward, your lives will be hard. But the price you pay is for your
freedom. Only I can protect that. And hear this. I will make Omega impenetrable. No one will ever threaten my domain again.
From this day on, the galaxy will know one hard truth.
Don't fuck with Omega.
All right. And I love how she kind of replaces Arya with Omega there, because it's otherwise the renegade version of that speech is otherwise kind of dark.
It is. It is very dark. It is all about the fact that now I'm back in power. I'm back in control. We will kill all the remaining Cerberus agents on here. And it's very much, it's a little depressing and dark. And I do like the Paragon ending. I like the Paragon speech more than I do the Renegade speech at the end.
The Paragon speech is far more dynamic for her as a character, right? Like, she's grown, and I forget how she follows that up, round up the remaining Cerberus troops, and doesn't she just hand them to the Alliance? Or
I think so.
She has a very eloquent way of putting it, but basically, the way that I see this renegade conclusion for the DLC is that we have solidified Arya's status as a demagogue.
Mm-hmm. And very much in that she has to keep her walls up and her barriers in place, because with Nyrene dead, you know, it's like you can't reopen your heart again, or it's going to get hurt again by, you know, they're willing to be self-sacrificing, and it doesn't feel as good at the end. To me, in the moment, it felt good killing Oleg because of everything that he put us through in this DLC, but not having Arya feel okay with herself at the end, yeah, it's not a good enough payoff.
Yeah, you see that flare of biotic energy around her as she gets angry while she's talking. And you can tell she's not really on a good track. She's not at peace. But I also found it interesting that she's talking about, I will never let anyone invade Omega again. And the way that she talks about that, if I remember off the top of my head correctly, is a little bit different in the Paragon one, where I would be interested to see in the next Mass Effect, if you are allowed to import your choices, is how you concluded the Omega DLC going to have an impact? Like, if we're talking about hundreds of years after the events of Mass Effect 3, does Omega become more of a friendly commercial hub than it previously was if you went with the Paragon route because of the change in leadership that Arya has? Or if you went the Renegade route, does it become this militaristic citadel? No pun intended. But you get where I'm going with that.
Mm-hmm. I think it'll definitely be interesting, and also to find out who now took Arya's place. You know, because as of right now, we don't have a clear line of succession as to who's going to be controlling after her. And so it would be very interesting to see where Omega goes in the future.
Yeah. And but, you know, that might be the end of the DLC. It's not the end of the game. And for some reason, Arya goes back to the Citadel.
Yeah, the last little bit of it is where it is really immersion breaking for me, and it's the part that I hate the most, because when we get back to the Citadel, Arya is right there on the couch again, and the weakest reasoning ever that is given is that it's easier to coordinate the mercs from Purgatory. Little Miss, I'm never leaving Omega. I will never let anybody invade it again. Here I am, Arya, back at the helm and in control. I am here for you, citizens of Omega. Oh, never mind. I'm going back to the bar that I said I hated. Kang, bye.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a little bit of a weak immersive break. I don't know why they couldn't just take her out of Purgatory after that, but whatever. You know, it's a really cool DLC. It's basically Arya, the DLC.
And I do. Overall, I agree. I love playing this DLC. And it's not so much about the overall Mass Effect lore, but the Arya of it all. It's the story that I wanted to follow. And the fact that it's got the gamer in me happy, because there's a really good balance between dialogue and combat. And the combat's engaging and difficult, and enemies that we haven't faced in any other DLC. And Cerberus that we have faced before, so there's a really good mix.
And I agree that in terms of, like, narrative, it still provides Shepard with ample choices to make big decisions about whether or not they're going to be this paragon of heroism or win at all costs kind of mindset.
I don't think that there will be a playthrough where I don't do this DLC, because not only do I enjoy it, I am also the completionist, but it's also, it's good to see Harriet again.
Oh, yeah.
I like the side quest of finding Arya's couch.
Hey, that's my couch. Or no, didn't she say, is that my couch?
Something along those lines. What's my couch doing down there?
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that wraps it up for Arya for now. I say for now because we probably will find something else to talk about with her later on. But the Arya character episodes pretty much wrapped up. I think from here, we're going to go forward and talk about Paul Grayson, finally. We'll see. We might want to break this up from the character episodes, maybe throw in a corporation or topical episode before we dive into Paul Grayson, because he's mentioned so much in the novels. That's going to be a series of episodes. And we do have, of course, the patron chat coming up at the end of this month, where we have a few new faces that we will perhaps meet. I can't wait to chat with them. But until next week, Genesis, what do you got going on, and how can people get a hold of you?
Yeah, so Friday, August 29th, which is coming up very quickly, I will be in Seattle at PAX West doing a panel with my other podcast, the Two Girls, One Ship podcast. So if you are going to PAX West, we are showing at 9 p.m. Friday night. So if you want to stop by and say hi, that is where I will be. But if you aren't into traveling, you can always listen to me on that said podcast, Two Girls, One Ship, and also on the Cyberpunk Lorecast, where we discuss everything related to the cyberpunk video game, TTRPG, Netflix series, the old school card game. If you want cyberpunk, that's where it's at.
That's so awesome. That's cool. If you're going to be around Seattle for PAX West, definitely go check out Genesis's panel. You can see her in person in all of her glory. All right. Well, that's all we got for this week, Spectres. Until next time, we should go.
Thanks for listening to the Mass Effect Lorecast. Reach out to us on Blue Sky, Twitter, Discord, Patreon, or email us at massEffectLorecast@gmail.com.
Join us next week for more lore. Same space, same time. Or check out our live streams at twitch.tv/massEffectLorecast.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.